Hello and welcome to Property Money Tree's Maximising Property Values, the once a month show where I break down the steps of how to recognise, enhance and then extract the values in property in order to create wealth. Would you like to find out how you can benefit from the steps of maximising property values? This is even if you don't own a property yet or have a deposit. If that's a yes, then you're in the right place to find out. My name is Patricia Ogunfaber, and although many know me for my work as a solicitor, on this show you will be getting the benefit of my 30 plus years worth of experience of maximising property values, experience which has given me a net worth in millions. So who might benefit from listening to this show? Literally anyone with an interest in creating property wealth. Welcome back. So this month's episode is going to be slightly different because I am Mark Lloyd's guest in another Clubhouse property room. And I just thought it would be interesting to share what we spoke about with all of my listeners.
Welcome to Wednesday Morning's Room, which is, as you know, is our deal focus room. And although we might be a little bit light on numbers with holidays and stuff, we've got an excellent guest this morning, Patricia, who is more involved in the 8:30 room, which many of you are listening to as well, so you'll be familiar with her, but some of you might not be. So, Patricia now for a couple of years, very experienced investor, but she'll do her intro in a second. We're going to focus on some deals, hopefully, that Patricia's going to share with us. So, Patricia, so for those that don't know you in the room, perhaps you can do an introduction to enlighten us as to who Patricia Ogunfaber is.
Wow, thank you very much. I'm, as Mark said, Patricia Ogunfaber. And I just absolutely, I love the property industry. It's so much more difficult these days, but it has just been so generous to me over the years that, you know, I can't but still be in love with it. I first became a landlord in 1986, and that the money that I got from that helped me pay for my second degree, which is a law degree, after which I then qualified as a solicitor, and I practiced as a solicitor until 2015, when my younger son went off to university. And I thought, well, actually, now that he's gone, I can literally just devote my time to doing the things that I really want to do. So I resigned my practice. I'm still on the roll of solicitors, but I'm non-practicing. And I decided that I wanted to just literally focus on my property portfolio full time, because whilst I worked as a solicitor, I was let down by managing agents and, you know, all the other people that I was relying on. And I thought, you know, I want to do this myself, because when I'm let down as a landlord, the tenants also let down. And I didn't really like that. And I have to admit, I still love it. I still absolutely love it. So that really is me. If you want to, you know, find out any more about me, tap on my face and you'll be able to read what I do from my profile. Because again, as I said, property has been very generous to me, and I'm one of the people who does appreciate that things are very, very different today to the way that they were when I started, you know, back in, you know, so earning money from 86, but my first purchase was actually before then. And so I kind of like share my experiences, you know, the things that I've done, the things that work for me, some of the things that haven't worked for me in my podcasts called Maximising Property Values. Again, I think, you know, that there's links of those somewhere. So today I'm here to share about a deal. And initially...
Before you do, I'm a little bit intrigued. Yeah. Your second degree you mentioned about, you didn't mention about your first degree, and you got a little bit quiet about that.
Okay, so when I wanted to go to university, I thought to myself, I want to do something that's not going to tax me at all. I didn't know what I wanted to do in life, and I thought, I'm definitely going to uni, but what should I do? So I kind of like looked around and I thought, because my A levels were biology, economics, and what was the third one? Probably chemistry. I can't even remember. It was that long ago. So I could kind of like, I had a number of options that I could, you know, go forward into. And so I decided to study microbiology. And I found it so boring. I absolutely hated it. But I think maybe a year and a half into it, I suddenly kind of like thought, I might actually enjoy this law malarkey. And so I finished the microbiology anyway. And then I went and studied law. So I could have done a conversion course, which is if you've already got a degree, back in the day, you only had to do another year and then you became a lawyer of sorts. And then you went and did your practical training and you qualified as a solicitor. But I thought, no, I actually think I'm going to really enjoy this law. I want to study it from scratch. So I literally started a second degree in law. And not only that, when I then finished that degree, I loved it so much, I decided to do a master's in it. I did my master's in tax law. But that was like yonks ago. I can't even remember what I used to do. It was good.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And also, I mean, you said you got your first property in 86, which was about the same time as ASTs came out, wasn't it? Somewhere around about then?
ASTs 88. In the Housing Act of 88. But back then in 86, I was aware of sitting tenants not leaving, all of that kind of stuff. But, I have to admit, when I started renting out, I wasn't even really aware of that. Okay, fine, we were studying it, you know, as part of my law degree and stuff, but you know, I didn't think it would have any practicality, you know, for me. And in fact, you know what, I think ASDs came out, yes, in the Housing Act of 88, but they didn't kind of like hit the mainstream until the mid 90s. So this place that I bought was a 2-bedroom flat. The lounge was massive. And then it had a decent sized bedroom and then a smaller bedroom. So I promptly parked myself in the smallest room of all three, converted the lounge into a bedroom, let the two bigger rooms out. And the rent that I got from that paid not only the mortgage, it paid my way through my second degree as well. And I had a Saturday job. It was in the Oxford Street branch of Wallis. I don't think they're still around. So I used to go there on Thursdays, which was like late night shopping, and then on Saturdays. And all of that money was more than enough for me. It was even enough to enable me to go on holidays. So things were that good back then.
So you're probably entrepreneur quite early. What's the motivation to pay for your university degree, or was there any other motivation to do property?
So if you had a degree, back then the government paid, you know, all tuition fees. That was just it. But if you already had a degree, no, you would not get your tuition paid. So I knew that I had to pay it. But can anyone on stage actually guess how much it was?
Well, for the property?
No, tuition. How much to go to uni?
Well, £12,000.
Anyone else?
I would have said about five back then.
What, 5,000?
Yes.
No, 500 and something. Oh. It was less than 600. So it wasn't very much, you know, admittedly, but it was how much we paid. So I guess that kind of like explains how, you know, the property could actually, you know, see me through. Together with my part-time job.
OK, Okay, that kind of makes sense. Sorry, morning, Harry. Morning, Sunil. Thanks for joining us. As you see, we've got Patricia this morning. Okay, so that's kind of starts you off. So, and obviously you've been in property quite a long time, and longer than certainly me, and possibly even Sunil, I think. You started 86. So what are you going to share with us this morning?
Oh, so I kind of like ummed and ahed about it. What shall I share? But I then exchanged on something. So it's a joint venture thing. So we exchanged on Monday. So I thought, do you know what? I'll actually share this because I love it. I think it's really interesting. And I hope that some people in the room might actually get something from it. So anyone who knows me knows that I love flats, maisonettes. Absolutely love them. The smaller, the better for me, as long as they're bigger, larger than 30 square meters. Anyway, this one's about 67 square meters, so it's not that small. It's a two-bedroom flat which has 55 years left on the lease, so it's a short lease flat. When I was looking at this, it was during the period when everyone was really scared about interest rates, about this, about that. So I saw that as presenting an opportunity to actually go and get some good valued stuff. It's also a probate flat. So it was on the market for £310,000. But my research sort of like indicated it was probably only worth about 290. So went to have a look at it and made an offer of 250, which was accepted. So I'm thinking, great stuff, absolutely great stuff. So let me now start to tell you. So with this particular one, I've identified, so I used to run a course, which I don't do anymore, but might go back to, because a few people have said to me, why aren't you running this anymore? Why aren't you running this? Please do run it again. But anyway, I used to run a course. And during that course, one of the things that I used to stress was, if people are buying, it doesn't matter what you think you might do with that property. Try and have at least three exit routes. So three different ways in which you can actually dispose of that property, because your number one might not actually work out. And then if you can go to number two, then hopefully it's not going to put you into too much difficulty. And even if number two doesn't work, then you've still got number three. Anyway, with this particular property, I've identified 10 possible ways to actually make money from it. So I kind of like thought it might be interesting. Some of them might not be that, you know, they're not that appealing, but there's still money there on paper, because at the moment everything's on paper, but I will share them one by one. So so the first thing that I thought, so, you know, remember, this is a £250,000 purchase, which, as I said, I'd kind of like worked out to be worth about 290 based on previous sales on that road for similar properties. Well, actually, same kind of properties, but with similar lengths of leases. So the first option would be to do nothing and resell it. Now, if that were to happen, which is not a very sensible way to do things, considering that we're actually going to be buying it, then we'd actually make £24,800. Now, how did I get to that? So our legal fees are, you know, including all the other bits and bobs, £1,500, including VAT, stamp duty is £7,500. So those two are going to be constant throughout the various options. And then council tax, utilities and insurance, I've put that down as £400,000. Total costs will be £259,400. Expected value / GDV, £290,000. Gross profit, £30,400. Sales costs at 2%, including VAT. So that will be money to pay an agent if we decided to go down that road, but I'd probably try and sell it myself. And also legal fees. I've got that down as 5,800. So that may or may not be 5,800 were we to choose this particular route. And that would then leave a profit before tax of 24,800. Now, some people might think, is that even worth, you know, getting out of bed for? And in fact, my podcast for this month was, how much do you have to be able to make to get out of bed? And 24,800 certainly wasn't the number for me. So that's that one.
I suppose it depends though on the time frame, doesn't it, of that? Because if you're flipping it on fairly quickly, 24,800 in a 3 month period equates to 100 grand for the year.
Annualized,
doesn't it?
You're absolutely right, Mark. You are. But the reason why I'm saying that this doesn't particularly work for me, I think will become apparent as we go through the other options that may well be there. But yeah, you're absolutely right. But it is one of those things which is an option. So say, for instance, if something really bad happened in my life and I completely lost the will to do anything, then this could well be, you know, the best option forward. Because it will be, yeah, let it just go. So that is option one. Then option two is to extend the lease and not do anything else and then sell it. Now, again, looking at prices on the road of, you know, properties like that, where they, you know, the lease was long, it was a decent lease, but it needed a refurb. You know, they were going for about £380,000. So again, purchase price 250, legals, etc., 1.5, stamp duty 7.5, you know, tarting it up, you know, kind of like minimally. So getting a painter in to just like paint the whole place over, washing the bathroom, cleaning the kitchen, tidying up the garden, you know, 1.5, nothing major. Lease extension, including the fees, because, you know, when you extend a lease, you have to pay the landlord's legal fees and their surveyor fees. And I've put down £50,000 for that. And then council tax, utilities and insurance has now gone up to £1,000. The reason being that in order to complete the lease extension, the property is actually being held for a lot longer. So that comes to a total of £311,500, expected value stroke GDV, £380,000, giving a gross profit of £68,500. Sales costs, again, at the 2%, which is high, but because if I sell it myself, it's not going to be that much. But I think we always have to kind of like think about, what if I can't do it? What if, you know, this and what if that? And you have to then get somebody else to do it for you. And that is why that figure is there. And if that is the case, the profit before tax will be 60,900. Then option three is extend the lease, refurbish and then sell. Now, okay, so again, we've got the same figures, 250 purchase, 1.5 legal, 7.5 stamp duty, refurbishment works, £35,000, lease extension, again, same, £50,000, staging costs, £3,000, council tax and utilities and insurance, £1,000. So that takes us to £348,000 costs. But so properties that do look nice and have been done up on the road are going for about £410,000. Now, I'd like to think that this one would be a lot nicer, but you know, when we're looking at these kind of things and thinking, you know, how much money might be in there, I tend to be a little bit conservative. So I've used that 410 in the hope that if this is the option, you know, that we're going to go for, it would be more. But you might kind of like surmise that I this might not be my favourite one, because the gross profit is £62,000, which is less than the £68,500 that I've got down for extend the lease and sell. And then the sales costs again are going to be higher at £8,200, leaving a profit before tax of £53,800. Now,
the time frame on the second one, which was just extending the lease, an approximate time frame on the third one.
Because you see, the works will be completed before the lease extension is actually finished, I reckon. Because I tend to prefer the formal route for extending leases. So you're actually using, you know, the legislation. You serve your Section 42 notice. You have to give the freeholder 2 months. So it has to be a clear 2 months. So if, say, for instance, you want to send the notice to the freeholder, let's say on the 1st of January, you can't ask them to respond to you by the 1st of March, because you wouldn't have given them a clear 2 months. So what you'd do is you'd probably, if you're going to be dispatching that notice on the 1st of January, you'd probably want to maybe date, you know, their response to come back to you for the 10th of March. So you're giving them, I always allow at least another week. So you've got your 2 months effectively there, because when I do these things, they're usually, you know, things that are going to complete simultaneously. But we don't complete them simultaneously, because the seller still has to own the property when the notice is served. So we normally say, OK, fine, we'll exchange and then we'll complete in maybe a week or two's time. But that is all time that is part of, you know, your planning time. So that there's 2 months there. And then when you get the freeholder's response, which is the Section 45 counter notice, you then have another 2 months within which to negotiate. And I've never, ever, in all the time that I've been doing this, had a freeholder who's actually agreed with the amounts that I've put into the Section 42 notice, which is usually, you know, quite hopeful, but not too hopeful, because if it's too hopeful, then they can actually say that your notice isn't valid because you wouldn't have expected to pay an amount that low. So you have to be very, very careful and tread that line quite carefully. So the 2 months for negotiation, that takes you up to 4 months, within which time all of the refurbishment works would have been done. And then if you're very unlucky, you might then need to go to tribunal if they're not being sensible. So it would be the same time frame for both 2 and 3, which is why the council tax and utilities and stuff is exactly the same for both. So now, if people are wondering, why would I even consider the third route, which is giving lesser profits, to the second route? The answer is, if a place is nicely done up, in comparison to something that isn't, it's probably going to go a lot quicker. And you're probably going to get, you know, the amount that you want from it. Now, still, it's going to be less money, but it is an option. So that is 3. The next one is to extend, refurbish and sell, but to add an ensuite to the flat. Now, this is where we can start to add value. So again, purchase price 250, legals 1.5, stamp duty 7.5. But refurbishment now has gone up to 40,000. Again, extending the lease is 50,000. Staging is the same, £3,000. And the miscellaneous stuff is 1,000. So that is like insurance, council tax and utilities. And that brings us a total cost of £353,000. But Now, this is where I've now had to rely on property data, because I haven't been able to find anything that has sold on that road with the extra ensuite. So that gives us a total cost of £353,000, but the value there is a lot higher at 460, which gives a gross profit. Again, all of this is on paper, I won't keep on repeating that, of a gross profit of £107,000. Sales costs at 2% is £9,200, and the profit before tax is £97,800. Then the next one, and this is why the property was attractive to me in the first place, is that on that road they have massive, massive lofts. And this particular maisonette is a first floor maisonette. So I was thinking it's either that the loft comes with the maisonette, or, I know I've been calling it a flat, but it is actually a maisonette because it has its own front door. I can negotiate, hopefully, with the freeholder. But I still had to make sure it was going to work, even if this didn't work. But honestly, sometimes you can just land on something that's really, really good, because not only does the loft come with the flat also owns the roof. So the demise includes not just, you know, the two bedroom flat, but also the loft and the roof. And I suspect that when the freeholder was actually drafting the lease, the freeholder did it that way in order to make sure that the freeholder, who has actually retained the ground floor maisonette, didn't have to pay any monies towards the upkeep of the roof. So they thought they were being clever, probably were being clever, but it works perfectly for us because what we need, and also this lease, I don't know who drafted it, but anyway, it is what it is. The lease doesn't say you can't carry out structural alterations. It just says that if you want to do any alterations, you need to get the freeholder's consent. Now, what it doesn't go on to say is what you'd find in fact, all modern leases, not to be unreasonably withheld. Now, so that could well be a bit of an issue for us, but I'm hoping to push a different kind of, like, you know, tact with the freeholder, because there is legislation, and for people who might be taking notes, this is how my mind works, so I'm sorry if I'm overloading you with stuff. But the Landlord and Tenant Act of 1954, and the bit that, if you're interested, you might want to read is section 19. Now, section 19, subsection 2, says that if a landlord, so this is the freeholder, has to give permission to do any alterations, their consent must not be unreasonably withheld. So that says that, but there's also another bit that says it doesn't apply to structural works. So how I'm actually going to kind of, like, you know, spin this, and that the landlord thinks that, you know, I've got them through the legislation if they want to play funny, I don't know. But, you know, there is that legislation that I can rely on. You know, worst case scenario, might have to pay the landlord some money. But there's also another thing. So it's a house, the building is a house, and immediately behind the house, there's a strip of land, which is also part of this first floor's demise. Now, I don't know why they've done it like that. It doesn't actually make sense to me, but this is what it is. And this particular thing is it's just giving to us, because what the freeholder has done is the freeholder has taken that bit of land, and it's now being used with a ground floor maisonette. Now, because the freeholder owns the ground floor maisonette, the freeholder can't say that they're claiming adverse possession because they knew that the land did not belong to them. You know, because when you're going to claim adverse possession, you claim it because, you know, initially maybe you didn't actually realise, you know, the land didn't belong to you and so on and so forth. Because, you know, if you're going to courts, you've got to go with clean hands. You can't. And also, if the freeholder then says, oh, do you know what, this land belongs to me, then that would be a breach of contract. Because in the lease, which is a contract that they gave to the first owner of the top floor maisonette, they said you can have this. Anyway, so that is what I'm hoping to negotiate with, because this is a cash purchase. So, you know, there's no lender to kind of like, you know, get very upset about, you know, giving away part of the demise. So I want to kind of like say, well, do you know what? This strip of land at the back of your maisonette, why don't you keep that? And, you know, just give me permission to extend in the loft. So anyway, we'll see. And I'll probably let you guys know through Mark or, you know, whatever, how that goes. So the lofts are very, very big. Now, I'm yet to get my architect to go and have a look, but I've looked at plans of other ones on the road and they are larger than 37 square metres. And this is why I went to go and have a look at the, you know, property in the first place, because the whole idea at that point was get into the loft, extend it more than 37 square meters, then apply, you know, for planning, obviously apply for planning to extend, apply for planning and landlord's consent to split the flats so that the flat in the loft is then a separate flat altogether. But I'll come to that in a moment. So if we put in a new ensuite, extend the lease, refurbish, and also go into the loft, the figures are 250 purchase, 1.5 legal, 7.5 stamp duty, refurbishment and works, £90,000, lease extension, £50,000, staging, £5,000, and then utilities, council tax and insurance goes up to £2,000, because that will take a longer period of time, because one, there's going to be a planning application at least, and then, you know, or whatnot. And also the works will take longer in any event. But then with that, we've got costs of £406,000, but we've now got a paper GDV of £560,000, gross profit £154,000, sales costs at £11,200 with a profit before tax of £142,800. So at this point, we're not splitting the flat, we're literally just extending, because, you know, the council may say, no, we don't want this. So, yeah, that is why that is a separate option. Then the next option is to do exactly what I've just spoken about, but split the flats into two separate ones. And then the costs then, so all the numbers are the same, apart from costs, which then go up to £120,000, because if we're going to be able to do that, we'll need like new utilities coming in, you know, water, gas and electricity, all of that. So that's gone up to £120,000. Again, lease extension, £50,000, staging, £5,000, and council tax, utilities, etc., £2,000. Then the next couple of options are if we do the loft. If we split the flats into two, right, so the costs are £436,000, but we have a GDV of £680,000, so that is a gross profit of £244,000, sales costs of £13,600 with a profit before tax of £230,400. Then the next couple of ones are assuming we can't get permission to split it and assuming we want to actually hold on to it. And that would be to HMO the property after the loft extension has been done. So if we HMO it with four en suites, again, we're looking at, you know, 250 purchase, 1.5 legal, 7.5 stamp duty. But I've put the costs down at £110,000, £50,000 to extend the lease. Staging will be £8,000. I tend to do, you know, £2,000 per room, really. Then the miscellaneous costs, stamp duty and stuff. So these are like a year-long project. So the extending, you know, the lease, sorry, the loft extension, splitting and the HMOs, I'm allowing a year for all of those works to be completed. So that would be £2,000. Total costs, £429,000. Now, I don't know what the GDV is going to be, because property data with HMO valuations tends to be a bit on the high side, but I've put it down nevertheless, because that is what I used to kind of like try and engage where we might be. And it says the GDV there will be £760,000, gross profit £331,000, sales cost at £15,200 were we to sell, but if we're going to go down the HMO route, we wouldn't. And then that will leave a profit before tax of £315,800. Now, if the HMO can be a five ensuite room HMO, which again would be an option, the costs to do it would be £115,000, staging costs £10,000. So we've got £7,000 more than the one that I've just spoken about, if it were to be four ensuite rooms. That would give us a total cost of £436,000. And again, property data, bless property data, says the GDV would be £950,000. It won't be that much, but anyway, that's what it says. So that's what's gone into my spreadsheet. Gross profit would be £514,000. Selling costs, again, wouldn't happen if it's going to be an HMO, £19,000. And a profit before tax of £495,000. So what I've done here is I've spoken about eight different routes. And in addition to those eight, I could actually source it at any point. So that's my nine. Or, you know, once planning permission's been obtained, sell with the planning permission without actually building it out. That makes 10. So what I'm now going to do, I've literally just looked at the, you know, the rental stuff, so only four of those. So I'll just quickly go to those. So if the lease is extended and it's refurbished, the expected rent, again, according to property data, I think I'd get more. I normally get more than property data's rents for non-HMOs. With the HMOs, property data tends to be spot on with what I actually get in reality. But anyway, this is what property data said regarding the rents. So this would be for a two-bedroom flat, lease extended and refurbished, £1,861, which would give a yield on the spend of 6.41%. Then if we extended the lease, refurbished with an ensuite, the rent is projected to be £2,074 a month, which would give an expected yield of 7.05%. And HMO four ensuites, expected rent, so I have no reason to doubt this, £4,664 a month. Expected yield 13.04%. And if it's five en suites, £6,256 a month, expected yield 17.21%. And I'm done with a dry mouth.
Wow. Okay. A few questions there, actually. Very interesting. I have to say, I mean, going through 10 different potential exits there. I think it's very interesting. Hopefully been a bit of an eye-opener for people that are listening in, and that's certainly an eye-opener for me. And what's interesting, actually, because this is in London, one of the comments in the chat box, I'm assuming this is not up north, I know you're
definitely, definitely London, yeah. And in fact, it's within walking distance of a tube station.
Okay, that's even more interesting. But the yields, I think, are what get me, because I think a lot of people think, you know, London, you can't get the yields that you can in certain, certainly some of the northern cities and Scotland. But you've kind of disproved that really with the figures there. I mean, even the lowest yield at 6.4% is not a bad yield, and certainly very good for London. And then going up to 17.2%, I mean, that's just, I think, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of that within London. I may be wrong. Yeah, maybe I'm, of course, I'm not based in London. I don't invest in London, but the impression is certainly that getting deals in London to provide a good yield is hard. And that's certainly my impression. And I don't know how many others in the audience today are based in London, but that's certainly would be my impression.
You know, Mark, you know, on that point, so obviously this is all on paper, but with the things I've actually done, those are the kind of yields that I'm getting. In fact, with my HMOs, I think I'm round about like 20 odd. So, yeah, I think the one true thing that people do say about buying in London is that your purchase costs are going to be so much higher. But other than that, you know, it's all about a bit of a misconception, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly has opened my eyes, definitely. And obviously, I'm not based in London, so I still wouldn't invest in London anyway. But I talked to a lot of investors who are in London, and they all heard all this kind of, you've got to go up north because it's cheaper, or you know, get better yields and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, it is cheaper. There's no question about that. But I think a lot of people do it because they don't think or feel they can get the returns on their money within London. And you've kind of disproved that a little bit. Okay, so one
can, I just interrupt? Just again, these kind of things, they're not, you know, as kind of like, I guess I was lucky to find it, and that is why I'm being a bit coy about where it is, because I want to kind of like just you know, keep an eye on there to see if anything else comes up so that I can grab it. So I'm not sharing it so that other people can then go and buy it or bid the price up, but. You know, sometimes you have to be patient to actually get these really good deals. And when you get them, you know, just grab them. You know, I'm going to be bidding in an auction today, and the returns on that, if I get whatever for, you know, the prices that I've put down as my ceilings, they're not going to yield as much as this one that I'm using as an example. But I thought I'd use this one with the number of exit routes, and also to get people to think, you know, you don't have to go and do a new build to make good money. You don't have to go and do and, you know, talk about, you know, I'm building 12 houses to make money. You can make money from small as well. I'm a small person. I like flats, I like maisonettes, and I like to make my money from them. So sorry, back to you, Mark.
Oh, thanks, Patricia. There's a couple of questions coming in the chat box. So David's saying, with the lease extension, can the freeholder refuse the Section 42 within the first 2 years of your tenure?
Okay, I didn't actually explain that very well. If you remember, I said the seller still had to be the owner when the Section 42 is actually sent to the freeholder. So, and this is on the assumption that the seller has owned the property for at least 2 years. Now, if the seller, if you complete and then you send a Section 42 notice, you're wasting your time because you wouldn't actually be able to comply with the law. Whoever sends that Section 42 notice has to have owned the property for 2 years, or they are a person who is acting on behalf or for somebody who's owned it for 2 years. So in our case, it's a probate sale. So the administrator, So the law gives the administrator the same rights as the person who died. And the person who, as long as the person who, in this kind of scenario, as long as they've owned it for 2 years, then the administrator can serve a Section 42 notice. It's the same with trustees in bankruptcy. Again, if the insolvent person has owned it for more than 2 years, the trustee in bankruptcy can give a Section 42 notice, and other people like that. So the law is very clear about who can give a valid Section 42 notice. But in the main, if you think about the person signing the lease, have they owned it for 2 years, stroke, are they getting their rights from somebody who's owned it for 2 years? And the answer is yes, then you're absolutely fine.
Thanks for that explanation, Patricia. I think that clears up a few points as well, because a lot of people, there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, with newer investors around that, particularly the probate side of things, where they're picking up a property and of course the vendor's died, so that on the face of it they can't give their consent. But of course, as you rightly say, it's the executors, trustees, that can actually give the consent to actually and sign the Section 42. So excellent. We've got another question. It says, when you extend into the loft, are you allowed to use the newly built space and title split? I was always thought that space standards take into consideration the original floor plan, ignoring any extensions. Maybe I'm wrong. I've been writing off many potential deals.
Right. Okay. So I think what that question might be referring to is if you... So let me take Croydon for instance. Croydon will say if you apply to split a property into more than one dwelling, and it's usually houses, that the space has to be at least 148 square meters. Now, if you then apply to Croydon and you say, and I want to extend, they'll say no, because you don't fit our criteria in that your original space, and I think it's a space from 1925. So any extensions before 1925 will be, part of what they can consider or will consider. But anything after that, they won't. And now this is slightly different. And again, that those are their rules, but some rules can actually be negotiated around. Now, first of all, this is a maisonette. It's not a house. So I'd be saying, do you know what? This is a maisonette and it's a first floor maisonette. And even though it has a garden, the garden is not immediately behind the building. It's behind the ground floor's bit of garden. So it doesn't lend itself to family living, which is why they have these standards, because they don't want family homes being lost because they're being split. Now, considering that this is actually starting out as not as a family home, they're not losing any family homes. And also another reason why I'm kind of like, wanting to do this is to do the extension first. And then, but again, it's something that, you think about, you talk to other people about, and you make sure that you're absolutely fine, because we will be going for pre-planning on this. If we do the extension first, again, I'd be arguing it's not a family home because of where it is, and that it's actually more suitable for young couples and stuff. But if it's done first and then we apply to split, I'm thinking, and I need to look into this a bit more, that we might not actually have to pay CIL. Because you don't pay CIL if you are creating a new dwelling, but you're not extending. But if I've already extended and then I'm creating a new dwelling, this is not my area, but I'm thinking, do you know what? That might be a good thing to do. But yeah, but thank you for that question. It's all up in the air, which is why I've got 10 exits, because if that's not going to work, one of the others definitely will.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually mentioned quite a few times with where you're looking to potentially obviously flip this on. You've mentioned about staging. Now, I don't know how many others actually do that, but is it something you generally do, or is it just when you're looking to flip it on, and it's something as a matter of course you always stage the property?
Oh, always, because It is really sad, and I mean no disrespect to anybody in the room, depending on their ages, but you know, young people who tend to be my market can't see beyond what is actually in front of them. Most young people, well, that I come across anyway. thank you, Harry. So with me, I can go into a place and it can look like, you know, complete shite, pardon my French, but I can see beyond that and see its bare bones and be able to immediately to see its potential or not. But, you know, young people these days, unless they see the sofa placed in a particular way, the coffee table in a particular way, the bed, the TV, I don't think it works for them. And I have found that when I stage, you know, my stuff literally just goes, whether it's, you know, letting it or selling it, it literally just goes. And I also enjoy staging. So it gives me an opportunity to just go out there and buy and spend some money. My husband doesn't even talk to me about that anymore. He used to say, why are you spending so much money? Now he just leaves me be. And one thing, and I will share this with the room, because, you know, I think, you know, when we come on, you know, on stage and we talk about the stuff that we're doing, I think it's incumbent on us to actually share value. One thing that I've found very, very useful with staging is Facebook Marketplace and paintings. So when I go onto Facebook Marketplace, I can't even use Facebook. I don't know how to use it, but for some reason, it lets me go to the marketplace. So I'm always going to the marketplace. I just type in original oil painting or original, you know, painting. And then I see, and I tend to go for abstract. That's what I like. And when I stage, I stage to my own taste. My properties are always painted in neutral colours, and you know the character is actually injected through the paintings and the furniture and the furnishings. But the paintings that I've got on Facebook Marketplace, some of them are absolutely amazing. So that is a good place to actually get stuff. I've bought one before for £200, which might sound a lot, but that painting was just honestly amazing. And it adds so much more to, you know, the property where I actually put it.
So you're buying the staging stuff, are you? Because I thought you were renting it based on the figures you mentioned, but you're actually buying some or renting some, or is it?
I buy everything. So I've often actually had people, you know, come into a place that I'm selling, and they've offered to say, and you leave everything that's in there. And I'm thinking, thank you, because if I have to remove the stuff, one, it's going to cost me to get a van, and I use any van for those kind of things, to get a van to go and get the stuff, and then I've got to store it as well. So it doesn't actually suit me to have the person not want, you know, the staging stuff. But, you know, it's usually quite tasteful. So most people are happy, you know, to have it. But I never offer it. I let them offer as part of their offer. And yeah.
Do you think, Patricia, that, do you think that the staging thing's changed over the last few years? Because I completely agree with you. I think that you can have, and I'm not sure how it used to be, but you know, you've got hundreds of properties now at your fingertips that you can just swipe through on Rightmove and Zoopla, and it's all online, and you need to stand out. Do you think that's one of the main things with it? People who aren't staging are struggling to stand out and actually get people to the properties offline.
Do you know, Harry, 100%. That is really just it. And that is again why, like, you know, for, you know, my mentees and stuff, I have this amazing photographer, and I always say to them, in fact, there's nothing to discuss. I say, do you know what? Lee will come and do your photography for you, because the way he photographs stuff, your place is just going to pop. And Harry, you're absolutely right. People are flicking through, and your place needs to stand out. And that's the whole essence of staging. Now, Mark, the reason why I don't hire my staging staff is that for the stuff that I like, I have looked into it with the staging companies, and I've looked, well, the one that I looked at when I did look at it, the stuff that I liked would have cost me more to rent than to buy if I went and got my own stuff. So I just thought, well, actually, that's not a road that I want to go down. I'll always buy because I'm always renting as well. And, you know, sometimes when you rent, you know, stuff, you know, gets old. So you can easily kind of like find places to slot, you know, things in if somebody who's buying doesn't actually want, you know, what you've put there.
And roughly how much did you say you were spending per room, per property?
So for HMO rooms, it's £2,000. And per property, usually about £3,000 going, yeah, roughly about that. So with the loft extension, I my figures here are £5,000 because I in my head, I'm kind of like thinking this is going to be two flats. So the 5,000 then was like two and a half, roughly about that. But it might not be that much if, you know, the local authority says, no, we're not happy for you to split. Because all of my figures, I tend to allow a bit of give, even though at the end of the, you know, the thing, I also have a contingency. But I just think, because with me as well, you know, I'll think, okay, fine, I'm going to buy this. And then I go and I start looking at stuff and I think, oh, do you know what? I'll pay an extra £50 because this, you know, £50 more expensive option is just so much nicer. So there's always a bit of give in my figures.
Okay, that's really interesting. The reason I've asked you about this is because as you know, I've got a project on at the moment and we're coming towards the end of the refurb, which is astounding. We've managed to do it in just about 4 months. But it's a 5-bedroom detached property. And I'm thinking about the staging, but I'm thinking, oh, that's going to, you know, how much is that going to cost me to actually get that property staged? So I might well pick your brains afterwards on that because it's certainly something I'm thinking about. Sorry, Harry, did you want to say something?
Well, no, sorry. I do have a question at the end, but sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Go for it. We're almost at the end of the room anyway.
Oh, perfect. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, no, Patricia, I was just interested. I know you were talking about buying your property, buying the property with your tuition and all that. When did you have the sort of eureka moment that this was, property was the thing for you?
Do you know, I wish I could say... I just woke up yes, I had this eureka moment. I didn't. I had a really good friend who was so we used to stay in her flat, and her dad owned a flat in Kensington in one of those like mansion buildings. And she said to me, she said, guess what? My dad bought this for £45,000. And it's now worth, I can't remember, maybe 145 it was, you know, back then. She said, property is the way to go. And then she bought a 3-bedroom, I think it was a 3-bedroom flat. She bought a 3-bedroom flat in Stamford Hill. And she converted all the rooms into, you know, into bedsits. And I remember us going to WH Smith to buy her rent book, and she'd go there every week and collect her rent. So I could see that it was a good thing, and I thought, I'm definitely going to do that. And also, I don't know if you remember that I said I first became a landlord in 86, but I bought before then. So the one that I bought before then, I actually bought with someone, and we were engaged and we bought the place, and then it didn't work out and we broke up. But within that short time, I think the stress of buying together is actually what broke us up, but it was a good thing with hindsight. But in that time, that property had gone up by so much. So I kind of like thought, I need to get on the ladder immediately for myself. So the equity that I got from that is what I used to buy my 2-bedroom flat, which then paid for everything. And that was just the beginning of, you know, the whole thing. So I've been very lucky all my life, I have to admit. And that was that. And Harry, who asked the question, is no longer here.
Brilliant. All right. Thanks for that, Patricia. Wow. So we've got to the end of the room already. I have to say, you know, of all the rooms I've run so far on this, has been one of the most interesting. I mean, in the sense of the way you viewed the property and the number of exits, I think that's kind of astounded me. I have to say, it will make me think a bit further on some of the stuff I'm looking at as well, because I think that's quite an eye opener, and hopefully that's what everybody else has found as well. So really, really appreciate that, Patricia. Thank you so much for giving up your early morning with us on a Wednesday. But we are done. Another Wednesday done. So another Wednesday deal room done with Patricia. We'll be back again next Wednesday. I can't remember who I've got next week, but I know I've been trying to encourage a number of ladies to come up. So I'm starting to succeed. So you will see a few more lady investors, which is what, you know, trying to get an equal between the guys and the girls on stage, because I think the guys sometimes dominate too much. So I want to get more. And that's fantastic insights this morning. I thought absolutely brilliant. So the room will be back.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Patricia. The room will be back again on Friday with Harry for Freedom Friday. Thanks again, Patricia.
Oh, Patricia.
Thanks for having me.